Hey Scott, we have Western states coming up. It's all the buzz right now. In fact, there are conditions out there that are sometimes unpredictable.
Do you know what I think of when you say buzz?
What?
Raspberry buzz.
Your mind is always on the tailwind, Scott. It seems that everybody that's running today out there, their mind is on the tailwind. Not only a little kick in the wind behind you, but a kick in the bottle too.
Yeah, and you know, we've been talking about it for a long time. They've been a very good partner of Trail Runner Nation for a long time. They've become a big partner in the trail running community. More and more races are using Tailwind out there on their aid station tables, Don.
Scott, there, you go onto the website, and it's available just about everywhere. It's amazing of how many places now carry Tailwind.
So why are we big fans of Tailwind? I'll tell you, one the big one for me is the savory taste. It's not that sweet, sugary. I can name four different brands that are just too sugary, that just gets tiring at the later stages of a race.
Hey, I could show you two bags of that other stuff that I have up in my running cabinet that's now brick hard.
Because it's just been sitting there.
That's right. It's a big clump of sugar. I'm using it as storage in case there's ever an apocalypse.
Yes.
That's what I'm saving it for.
So one of the other good things about Tailwind is you only need one drink.
And it has the calories you can use, Scott. You take a drink of it, gets into the stomach, gets into the bloodstream, into the muscle, and bang, you're down the road.
That's a good thing to be, down the road.
So go to, either go down the road and pick some up, or get online and go to tailwindnutrition.com, over to our site, go to partners, bang, you're there, and order yourself some Tailwind.
And get one behind you.
Get one what?
Tailwind.
That's good.
Are we recording?
Dr. Romanoff, you're probably very experienced at professional interviews. This is not one of them.
Oh, come on. Don't put yourself down.
We are very casual. That's a good word.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Ward.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And today we have, we're less than a week away from the 2015 Western States 100. And we have two people that are veterans at Western States. Both of them have three finishes under their belt. We have Paul Terranova from Texas and Eliza LaPierre. Good morning. And Eliza LaPierre, who is from Vermont, and they probably already have their bags packed.
Yeah, I would hope so.
They've checked into their flights, and we're that close to Western States.
Yeah, that's when all the training is done and the tapering is underway as well. And that's our topic today, is a little bit about tapering.
And Paul and Eliza not only are veterans of Western States, but they're pretty fast, Don.
Oh,
they're lightning fast, and that's why we decided to get them now. Because if we were to go up to Western States to try to catch them during the race, we would never catch them.
We would not. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet.
Happy to be here.
Well, thanks for coming. So we thought we'd kick around this topic, tapering, because it's something that we always, in a sense, look forward to, because there's a lot of tough training as we ramp up for our events, and we look forward to that bit of a break. But how much break do we take? How much should we take? And what happens during that break? That's where we're going to start with this topic.
And what mistakes can we make?
Well, we don't even
know. Or should we make?
We don't even know really where we're going with it, but we do know that we have two very smart people that can kind of throw some information around. And so we started with this. We said, let's name the top three things you like about tapering and the three things you really don't like about tapering. There's got to be some bad to the good. So that's what we're going to talk about. And in TRN, kind of what we do,
fashion,
we want to throw a little bit of substance too. So I went online and I found a PowerPoint presentation by somebody. Well, let me give you, I should probably mention his name because that's important. The man has a PhD and he's done a lot of good work, and I sent it over, and it's in my phone here. So that, I need to find it. And Scott, cover for me, brother. Help me out.
It's Joe Vigil. Wasn't it Joe Vigil?
Joe Vigil. Thank you very much. The taper has been defined as a decrease in work level that an athlete undergoes during practice in order to rest and prepare for a good performance in the key event in a season or year. It is specialized exercise technique designed to reverse training-induced fatigue without a loss of training adaptations. So that's good stuff. That means you can either make a mistake and make it work for you or make it work against you. So
I have a question to start out.
Let's ask.
How long should a taper be? So let's dial this into something specific. Western States is 5 days away from where we sit right now. Eliza and Paul, are you tapering? How long have you been tapering, if you are, or are you awaiting your taper?
Eliza, let's start with you, and then we'll roll to Paul.
I'm not a big fan of tapers, but my coach definitely insists that I do one. So mine's about a week and a half long. So I'm about a week in right now. And really what we do is we minimize the duration and the mileage, but I still do some workouts. So I'm still getting some intensity. So I still am taxing myself a little bit and keeping my system sharp, but I'm not, you know, going out and getting really fatigued.
How much of a decrease? 20%, 30%?
Oh, I would say 50%.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I'm going from 100 miles a week down to 50. So it feels pretty dramatic, if not very dramatic.
Are you replacing the time? So let's say in that exercise time that you have budgeted for running, is that replaced with, you know, you're decreasing, you're running by 50 miles. Are you replacing that with other low intensity, you know, going for a walk with a dog or getting in a swimming pool, or do you replace it?
I'm not replacing it with any new activities because that would just kind of defeat the purpose. But yeah, definitely more time for dog walking and, you know, factoring in the heat training and sitting in the sauna, that takes up some of the extra time as well.
Okay, so decreasing by 50%. Before we go roll into the intensity piece, Paul, how much do you decrease?
Well, mine, and I'm the opposite of Eliza in that I look forward to tapering, and my wife Meredith says that she's more on the Eliza boat where she doesn't like it very much, and I greatly look forward to it, and mine's more on the order of 2.5 weeks worth of taper, and I'll gradually decrease down to about 50% here in this last week, but more over 2.5 weeks. And like what Eliza said, keeping the frequency of the workouts, but dialing down the duration of them, keeping that intensity up, but definitely allowing more time for all those other little things to do in between workouts.
So for both of you, is it a gradual taper? I mean, you don't like 1 week say, okay, today I'm going to dial it back 30%, and you go from 100 miles a week to 70 miles a week, or is it a, more of a gradual?
For me, it's pretty dramatic. It's pretty more likely that I'll go from 100 miles and just straight down to a 50 mile a week. Mm-hmm. Just based on how I feel and what works for me, that's kind of what we stuck with. And I think it allows me to get in some more high volume weeks before I do my taper and just have that confidence of you know, I just did some big weeks and now I can taper and feel comfortable with that. And just it makes it feel like a shorter process.
How about you, Paul?
Mine's more gradual, but a couple weeks ago, so Meredith swam around Key West, Florida, and I got to kayak for her and be her water guardian. So that was Saturday, June 6th. So I was not, that was a forced weekend of taper as I got to sit in a kayak for the better part of 7 hours. So that was a good chance to signal to me and my body that, hey, all right, it's time to start that taper. You know, get in some short runs down in Florida, And then we came back Sunday afternoon, and that was a good frame up or change of reference for me that, hey, all right, the training's done. Now it's time to start dialing things back.
So I've often wondered for you elite athletes that are running, you know, many, many, many races a year. Both of you recently ran your last race in May. So especially for you, Paul, you say that your taper is 2.5 weeks. I mean, after that race, I'm sure there's a recovery time. You don't jump back in the next week or that week into these high mileage, high intensity training. I mean, there's got to be some recovery time. And how do you get back into the full on training intensity and then all of a sudden turn around and do another taper? How does that look?
And May, you're talking about Quicksilver 100K, I presume.
Yeah.
So that was intentional, knowing that, hey, 2 weeks or a week and a half later, going out to Western States training camp. So Quicksilver 100K, and then generally couple days easy after that. And then the following week and weekend was Western States training camp. So that was intentional to go, hey, see where I was at. Quicksilver 100K, by the way, phenomenal Western States training. Lots of good long downhills. Starts getting warm, and they do a really good job there. Great post-race venue as well. So highly recommend that for anybody looking for a good, solid 100K.
And we will throw in there, Paul. Excuse me for interrupting you, but we need to wave the banner for you. Paul placed second place at Quicksilver 100K.
Okay, so he was going there with an agenda.
Yeah, he was not starting his taper before that race.
No, that was the end of a good little block, because I had consecutive the weekend before. I had the Grand Ridge 50K
first
up
place
in Washington State. Just little local races up there for a family event, first communion for my niece and nephew. So, and there was also a 50K that morning or the morning before. So, got to knock that out and run some good trails in Washington State.
Well, speaking of top finishes in races that you're prepping for Western States, I would like to ask this. And for you both, how many solid races do you think you could run each year? I mean, where you can say, I'm going to go after that, I'm going to get on the podium and put my all-out effort and look for just outstanding performance. How many times do you ask that of yourself each year? Eliza?
I guess I'll start. Yeah, I would say realistically for me, it can be 2 to 3 times a year. It really depends on the distance of the race and obviously the competition. But, I mean, races like Western, I think I could do 2 a year realistically. 50s, you know, I think I could do 3. But it really comes down to just if you've done proper training and if you're taking care of yourself on a day-to-day basis and if you're listening to your body and letting the recovery happen before you go out and train for that next race.
How about you, Paul? How many top races do you think you could put out there each year?
Anywhere from 2 to 4. This year, right, Bandera was early on in January, and then 3 weeks later was Rocky Raccoon 100. So took advantage of some really good fitness from Bandera. And notched a overall national championship there at Rocky Raccoon. Then took February pretty much off. So that was my plan going in. And now everything since March has been building up to the end of June. And then really I've left the latter part of this year wide open just to explore some different races and different terrain and not necessarily have a race penciled in the schedule just yet.
You mentioned two words that I'd like to kind of dig into a little bit, and that's blocks. So block training, and I think that's will be interesting to talk about. And taking off, intentionally removing yourself from maybe your shoes or from a training log Can we talk a little bit about how you do your blocks or how you define blocks?
Sure. Particularly right. So we can talk about after Bandera, that Bandera Rocky Raccoon period, which was January essentially, where they were separated by 3 weeks or so. And then, February, other than pacing at the Austin Marathon, which we've done for probably the past 8 years or so, it was just, runs with the dogs and easy stuff here and there, easy swims, easy bike rides. Not really much, but taking it easy the month of February. So that was a programmed-in block of training, and I will admit that that's about Girl Scout cookie season time as well. And I placed all these orders for Girl Scout cookies, but unfortunately none of them got here until March or April. So then when I started training again in March, I had all these cookies and I was really planning on eating them in February. So
those store really well in the freezer, Paul.
Yes. So I'm definitely looking forward to July and digging into those Girl Scout cookies.
Hey, what's your favorite Girl Scout?
Those are not Meredith approved, by the way. I want you to know that.
I understand she has a pretty strict diet. What is your favorite Girl Scout cookie, Paul? And then we're coming to you, Eliza, so get yours ready.
Oh, mine is that peanut butter patty. I think they call it a tag-along in some regions, and they've got other names for them. I did learn that depending on where you live, even in the state or the country, they have different bakeries, and some of those have different flavors that you can't get in other regions.
So, I think we should do a podcast on Girl Scout cookies around the world.
How about you, Eliza? What's your go-to?
To be honest, I'm not a Girl Scout cookie kind of person. Living in Vermont, I'm definitely more of a Ben and Jerry's ice cream kind of girl.
Okay. Ice cream.
Well, we can shift the topic easily enough. What's your favorite Ben and Jerry's? Is where it kind of on the taper topic?
They just came out with these new ones that have like this caramel fudge core that's in the middle. It's ooey gooey, and then they put two different flavors of ice cream on the outside. So any of those, I can down pretty easily.
This question has to be asked then. It sounds like in your taper, you're allowed to eat some Ben and Jerry's, Eliza. Is that why you are smiling as you tell us about this caramel core?
I actually try not to eat that stuff while I'm tapering. Oh. Trying not to put on too many pounds here when my miles decreased.
Okay.
So... yeah, been a little more strict with my diet recently.
Is there a Ben & Jerry's in Auburn?
Oh yeah. We don't have an official store, but you can find it in the your ice
section.
Cream aisle. Yeah, at your local grocer.
My family's been partial to. I don't know if you had it in your part of the country. I think it's pretty regional. But the Tonight Show,
yes.
Jimmy Fallon Tonight Show flavor.
Mm. Yep, my husband was actually eating that just the other day. So
that's a good one.
Hey,
that's the other note that Don is now taking. He has 1 point for taper, and he has another note that says, pick up Jimmy Fallon Tonight Show, Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
That's not what I wrote down, but that does remind me. I do need to pick up some of that stuff up. Okay, well, that's good. How about block training for you, Eliza? And then let's get into the fun, the meat of this thing, the top three and likes and dislikes about tapering. How about you and blocks?
I would say that my block training and my time off definitely got a little mixed up this year. I was originally in my off season as Bandera approached, and then my coach decided that Bandera would be a good race for me to try to earn a Western State slot. So my off season got cut short, and I went straight into training for about 2 weeks and then ran Bandera the following week. And then started training for Trans Gran Canaria. So, things kind of got kicked off in high speed for me this year, and there was no easy gradual get back into things. It was ready, set, here we go. And luckily I've held together and things seem to be going well. So we'll find out this week.
Hey, let's give a shout out to your coach. Who's coaching you right now?
Brian Powell of Iron Far is coaching me. He's been my coach for maybe 5 or 6 years now, and just a really good fit.
Good. Yeah, I remember you were being coached by him, and that's nice because he's very knowledgeable and knows his stuff. So that's 5 years in. That means you have some great benefit there.
Yeah. He really respects. That I'm not a super high mileage person and understands that, you know, we do have some funky weather here in New England. So it's really nice to be able to work with somebody that, you know, is really receptive to what's going on in my life and how I feel and is flexible. So it's been a good match.
How about you, Paul? Do you have a coach or are you a self-coached athlete?
Well, I do... typically two of my workouts a week, sometimes three, with Steve Sisson's Team Rogue marathon training group here in town. Mm-hmm. So Steve's been a mentor and a coach of mine for, gosh, probably since 2006 or so, but offers me the flexibility that he knows that I've been either competing in triathlon or now trail running for the past couple of years, that I'm going to supplement his base marathon training with the specialized, whether it's hill training or trail running, and plug that in as I need it and as I see fit. But he's always available for counsel and mentor and guidance and overall motivation. So yeah, big shout out to my teammates at Rogue Running here in Austin, Texas.
Nice. You know, there seems to be quite a theme with these elite athletes. They're not afraid to reach out and get coached, you know. It's important to have accountability and someone to not only for accountability. These guys are all motivated, but it's nice not to go out too far or pull back when you need to, or have somebody watching and observing some of your performance when you're sometimes too close to it. It's hard to see what's happening. So it's good to have an experienced athlete watching. So that's good. Are we ready to dig in?
And having a group of other runners to train with as well. It's great having guys and gals that are as fast or faster than me. In fact, one of them, Brian Morton, will be one of my pacers on Saturday. He's paced me the last 2 years, and so we've got a lot of experience together, and it's good to train with people faster than you.
Well, absolutely. I've known the pain. Getting out there trying to keep up. All right, top.
And by the way, I checked that the closest Ben and Jerry scoop shop to Auburn is either Berkeley or Napa.
There may be
on the way to the Sacramento airport.
I was gonna say there may be a post run celebration at the Ben and Jerry scoop shop.
Maybe.
Okay, hey, let's let ladies go first. Eliza, let's start with you, and shall we go?
Let's be positive.
Let's be positive.
So what's the best part about taper for you?
I think that it gives me the opportunity to really be a nerd. I'm kind of a nerdy person, and it just gives me more time to study courses and plan my nutrition and make spreadsheets and look at the weather forecasts and. It just, like, organize and details and all of that good stuff. So, yeah, I like being nerdy. Mm.
How about for you, Paul?
I think the number one thing for me is the chance to revisit old taper workouts that have went or have gone really well for me in the past, or to do new ones that I've been looking forward to doing. So as I've looked ahead, you know, towards these 3 weeks, there's been certain workouts that you look forward to, and you save them for that taper period. So that's the number one thing that I look forward to in this time period.
As you decrease your intensity in some of these workouts, do you enjoy that level of fitness that you've produced, where you're saying, "Man, this is really easy. I I'm really in shape right now. Do you have that spot where you go, yes, I'm there? That familiar taper workout where you go, okay, I've achieved that place that I want to be. Do you have that check-in point?
Yes, no doubt. No doubt that being in that taper mode is enjoying that fitness that you've worked so hard for, and being thankful for it and showing gratitude for it. And hopefully we've gotten to this point where we're healthy and we're happy and things are going well. And it's a great feeling to come into it and know that you're fit, know that you've worked your tail off for 10, 12, 14, 16 weeks, whatever that period of time is that you've been working so hard towards. And it's a really good time to reflect back on the body of work that you've done and be thankful for it.
Hey, so taper really isn't a time to heal. I mean, you, Eliza, you're like at a week and a half taper. That's mm-hmm. Heck, I've waited in that long of a line down at the local DMV. It takes it's not a long taper, but it's not a time where you go, okay, I'll let this ankle heal up or this knee get a bit better during my taper. I'm not sure that's a good strategy. I think that's if you have that problem, you need to back off earlier and heal up. So, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely agree. This year, I've really focused on being proactive instead of reactive with my body. For the last couple of years, I've really struggled with injuries and, towed the line at Western States 2 out of 3 times with healing stress fractures in my feet and after foot surgery 1 year. So this year, I figured, okay, let's stay on top of this. Let's, go to PT even though I don't have a specific injury. Let's keep everything in balance and stay on top of everything before it becomes an issue. And that's allowed me to take a really short taper because I haven't been injured or had any little niggles or naggles. And so I think that's really been a positive thing that I've incorporated this year.
So you would say that doing some preventative work has really been a new thing for you, at least this year, by the sounds of the story, and very, very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've always done, things like foam rolling and stretching and ice baths, but just going to PT once every week or once every 2 weeks just to get another person's perspective on how everything looks, from my running form to, just having somebody ask from the bottom up how everything feels specifically has really benefited me.
How about you, Paul? Preventative work along the way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And tapering offers just a little more extra time to do all those little things. I refer to those as training multipliers because they really enhance the training and the work that you've done, whether it be stretching, sauna, hot yoga, aqua running, hot tub, massage, physical therapy. All of that really, really helps and enables us to bring or get the most out of the training that we've done. So I am definitely in that prehab camp of doing those things all throughout the year, but especially now during taper time.
Nice. Are we right? Go ahead, Scott.
I want to ask you, Don, what's your favorite thing about taper? Did I catch you off? Was that one of your the one bullet point?
No. Down? No, I've got multiple here, Scott. I've got another side to the sheet that you haven't seen.
Okay. What's your favorite thing about taper?
Well, I'd say one of my favorite things about taper is catching up on some of the things that I need to catch up on. When you put in the long training hours in, there are a few things like the lawn. There are some things that I've just ignored.
Seasons of Mad Men? I don't know.
But, just other obligations, whether they're work, home, family, whatever, that certainly need
work a little bit.
Get a little more attention. Yeah. So how about you, Scott?
I like the ability to rest some of those aching pains.
Yeah.
And nagging, I guess you can't say injuries. I mean, we just discussed you're not going to get better from those injuries, but just those little you wake up in the morning and it just feels good not to be walking the first 100 yards with a cane.
Scott, you've gone too far if you're carrying a cane around. it's a lightweight cane.
And I'm gonna put another one real quick. Yeah. I'm gonna go with my number two. Sleep. You get more sleep. You don't have to wake up as early in the morning, right?
That's true. That's nice.
Sleep is good.
All right, let's go. Go ahead, Paul.
Gotta get naps. Yeah, naps on the weekend. Well, that should be part of our routine anyway. And if you're able to get naps during the week, all the better. But certainly, getting a nap for sure on Saturday and sometimes on Sunday is definitely nice. And speaking of projects around the house, I still have one from January that I was hopeful to get done after Rocky Raccoon in February that I didn't. And it's still on my list here, so it'll have to wait until July. And I've got some kitchen counter tile that I've got to regrout in there because we put in a new dishwasher over Christmas and New Year's set up. So I still have some projects too. So I empathize with that.
Do you think that you could drive down the street and find out who endurance runners are just by the look of their house? Like, oh, looks like they're doing a taper. Looks like they're in their high intensity block.
All right, Paul. I did. In fact, they had a brush pickup last week. And so I had a whole bunch of branches and stuff in the backyard that I pulled out on Saturday afternoon. That doubled as my heat training as well because I was dragging branches and stuff out to the curb so that they could pick it up on Monday.
It is bad when you start to try to figure out how is this training in whatever activity you're doing.
Making excuses.
Yeah, how can I actually make an entry into my personal logbook on either heat training or some stretching or whatever it might be?
I used to actually record that on my training log and send it to Brian Powell. And finally he's like, take lawn mowing off. It does not count. And I was doing it. I was also mowing for an outdoor family center nearby. And I was like, no, Brian, you don't understand. This is like 8 hours of mowing. And he's like, come on. So finally I GPS'd it and it was 26 miles of mowing. I was walking behind the push mower. So
every week.
So I convinced them that could count as training. Yeah.
I think he was probably thinking of a smaller lawn. And you're actually.
So the question I would have if I was Brian was Eliza, was that a riding lawnmower?
No, it was a walk behind.
Okay. And so you're actually walking.
Yeah. And unfortunately it didn't go fast enough. So you could really run behind it. It was like the awkward in between pace of like a walk and a run, so it was a little aggravating.
Let's go with a dislike, Paul. Let's start with you this time.
Oh, it's bittersweet that, and this one's actually on both of my lists, the positive and the negative, is that the journey is almost over, right? It's good in that, hey, right, we're almost there, we can taste it, but then Saturday afternoon, boy, we're gonna get to Forest Hill and say, whoa, it's almost over. And so that's a bittersweet moment that all this build up and Saturday is gonna go so fast. And so that's a time for me where it's right, this journey is coming to a close. So that's something that I don't always look forward to because the journey is a good time to really learn and grow and explore boundaries. So that's something that's bittersweet.
Eliza?
For me, the dislike would be like the phantom ailments that come up in your mind. And, you know, every little ache and pain, you're thinking, you know, your leg is broken or you've torn your meniscus, even though it's like just a little twinge. I always fear the worst. And also, I just become hyper aware of everybody who's sneezing and coughing. And it's like, you know, they don't have Ebola. Like, it's okay. I can be in the same room as them. And So I just start freaking out about sickness and injury.
You know, I've never thought of that, but you know, you don't want to go to the starting line to your A race that you've been training for 9 months for with a sniffle.
Well, you know, they take the astronauts and they quarantine them before, you know, to make sure that they're not going to catch a head cold or something right before the big launch. And so that we need to quarantine our athletes. You just compare.
And a good way to think about that, too, is that if you do get sick before, that's extra force taper. So if you do get the sniffles, then just sleep and rest up. And that's a positive way of thinking about it.
I'd say, Paul, you're the eternal optimist. You're going to find a silver lining everywhere.
I try to. Thank you.
And I think that's really a quality or a characteristic of an ultra runner, regardless of where you are through the finish line. You have to be positive. You can't go around kicking the dirt all the time. You have to absolutely be one that turns lemons into lemonade. There's a cliche for you, Scott.
Yeah, thanks.
I've been accused of using a few along the way. All right, just unlike. How about you, Scott? I have one here.
You know, I get grumpy.
Yeah?
And that's, I don't like being grumpy. I find that I need that run to boost my attitude.
Mm.
Don,
you ready for my?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Well, you know, I always have. I always think that somewhere along the line in my training cycle here, I'm going to turn into just an amazing, fast, elite athlete. Just keeping up with Eliza and Paul, and somewhere along in this training block, it's going to happen. And as I get closer and closing on this race day, I see that it's not going to happen. I'm not getting that much faster. So, I think that my my dreams of really screaming along and hitting a new plateau in fitness isn't going to be there, which is okay. But that's I would say that's just something you come to the reality of. This is the best shape that I'm going to be in during this period of time.
So
it's
when
not gonna change.
So when you're in your training mode, you don't have time to think about that. But when you start tapering, your mind starts playing games with you.
Hey, training mode, I can always get better and faster. You know, things still have time to improve. And as you get closer, you go, well, this is it. This is the vehicle I've built.
This is the best I'm gonna be.
This is it. And okay. So I kind of, you know, I always like to look out and always dream a little bit more. So I think that's it with me. I learned that fitness level. Are we ready to move to a positive? A positive, Eliza? I think you kicked us off with positives.
I think I would just kind of echo the word Paul used, and that's gratitude. And just having the extra time gives me more opportunity to see my family and my friends and my training partners, and just, you know, spending time with them that usually I'm out running is just really something I'm thankful for. And I appreciate that they're all so supportive of what I do, and understand that, you know, I might be out running for 6 hours instead of at a family event. So for me, it just gives a time to show them and remind them that I'm thankful, and just kind of bring me back down to earth. And so just gratitude.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. How about you, Paul? A top one?
Top one for me is I finally get to let myself run in lane one on the track. Normally, I'm perfectly content in lane two or three or four and run that extra distance, but during taper time, it's time to take the shortest route and run the tangents and do all that. So that's a quirky little thing that I do. But when it's hardcore training time, hey, I'm content in lane two or three, and then taper time, hey, I'm right there on the line.
Gosh, I run down the middle of the field. I don't know about you. Lane one.
That's definitely cutting the tangent.
Yeah. How much track work do you guys do, or speed work or turnover work in preparation for your endurance activity?
I personally do speed work once a week. Anything from intervals to just kind of like tune up 5K races. And then I also do like a hill workout once a week.
So one speed workout, one hill workout. Is that what you do, Eliza?
Yep, and then on the weekends, my long runs, obviously. That might incorporate some kind of hills or tempo run sort of thing.
Do you use a heart rate monitor to kind of regulate?
Dang it, that was my question.
To regulate your intensity, or do you just listen to your body?
For years and years, I've just been doing the listening to my body and, you know, kind of have a sense of what my heart rate is at. But this year I've been training with a heart rate monitor and really using that to gauge not only how hard I'm going, but how easy I'm going. Because typically on easy days, I have a tendency to push harder than I should. So, a heart rate monitor has definitely been incorporated into my life.
And what's the change from not using a heart rate monitor to using a heart rate monitor? Did you find that you're working harder now on hard days, or did you learn something from the heart rate monitor?
I don't think I'm working harder on hard days. I think, like I said, I'm working easier on easy days. Just keeping myself honest and realizing I don't have to go hard all the time, and that it actually benefits me to really take advantage of my easy or moderate days.
How about you, Paul? Can we find a heart rate monitor somewhere in your stash of gear?
I'm sure we have some around here somewhere, but they do not get used. but speed work for sure finds a place, whether it's on the track or fartlek type workout or strides after an easy run. But I'm perfectly having dogs and having a great running partner in Meredith. It's great to just go out on an easy Sunday and take the dogs for a trail run and get them out and do it without a heart rate or need of doing that. So, there's no heart rate monitor attached to my chest or on my watch.
What is a stride workout after a hard run? What is that?
A stride, anywhere from 10 to 20 seconds, little pickups. So 6 to 10 of those after an easy run. Do those just to get the legs moving a little bit quicker.
Okay.
After an easy run.
Don, what about you?
And those can be done either flat, or you can do some hills on those. You can do quick little strides up a hill.
Do you guys have different gear? You know, I don't know why I'm asking this. maybe because
you want to know.
Yeah. Well, I could think that if I was doing speed work, that maybe a different pair of shoes to choose from, different gear, something that says this is speed work day versus, say, your long run day. Do you have a different uniform in a sense that you put on for this specific training?
I think for me it's more not what I have on for clothing, but for shoes. If I'm going trail running, I'm going to wear something more with an aggressive tread, whereas if I'm going to do speed work, you know, I'm going to wear more of a racing flat type shoe.
What shoe are you running in, Eliza?
For Western?
Yeah.
I'm actually going to be running in the Salomon Wings. They're not actually on the market yet here in the U.S. I think they're going to be released in the next month or two. But I got a hold of a pair about 2 weeks ago, and I actually am loving them. So they've got a pretty decent tread on them, and a little protection in the toe area and a little cushion underfoot, but not too much. So you can definitely get feedback from what you're, you know, getting from the trail. So I'm pretty excited.
The benefits of running for Team Salomon.
That's right. Yep.
Hey, Paul, what are you wearing at Western States this year?
I'll be rocking a pair of Hoka Challenger ATRs, same as what I wore at Bandera 100K and Quicksilver 100K, so I've got quite a bit of miles in pairs of those. I think the first race I did in those was Mountain Massacre's 50 miler back in November. So, yeah, loving that shoe and really looking forward to wearing that the whole way.
You know, I have a quick question for you guys. You know, Eliza, you said you wear a different shoe for your speed training days. I think I've become a trail snob, meaning I really do not like running unless I'm on a trail. So I dread going out and doing the run around the block on pavement. Do you guys, is that a regular occurrence in your training? Are you spending time off the trail as well as on the trail?
I would say that I definitely spend maybe in the summer it's 30% on the road and then 70% on the trail. I find that it really helps with leg turnover and speed to do some training on the road. I mean, it's definitely got some pros and cons, but I mean, I ran the road yesterday and I felt like a track star, to be honest. I mean, I was looking at my watch thinking, wow, is this thing broken? Like, you know, a 6 minute mile, like that's crazy. And, so sometimes it's a nice way just to get out there and crank out some miles and, to feel good about it, I think.
Psychologically, I bet you that's a huge boost, because when you're toeing the line at Western States and you think, you know what, I need to pull a, you know, an 8 minute mile or a 7 minute mile on this section, you know that you can do it because you just saw it on your watch, right?
Yeah. I mean, the trails have advantages as well. I mean, definitely they don't beat my body up as much, and I definitely enjoy being in the mountains and being in nature. But like I said, each has pros and cons and advantages. So, I do take to the road quite often.
I think we can, as trail runners, can we have to be careful about not getting into that just that constant slog stuff where we're just running the same pace all the time. And if you want to get faster, you just have to run faster. And so,
well, or the mindset where I'm going to skip this workout because I don't have time to get to the trail.
Mm-hmm.
It's better to get out and run than it is to skip that workout.
Oh, are we on top?
Yes.
Top items. Okay.
I think it's your turn.
I think it is my turn. I tried to delay as much as I could. I think it's like, as a kid, you look forward to birthdays, you look forward to Christmas, you look forward to so many things. And as an adult, there are less landmark things like that to look forward to. But I think a big race is one of those. And you start to feel excited inside. You start to call your friends that are running it, or your training partners, and you're kind of giddy. You throw some text back and forth. It's a fun time of anticipation. It's fun, and that's what I like about it.
Is there
getting close?
Is there smack talk done on the ultra on the elite runners? Are you guys the top 20 people? Are you guys sending text back and forth, kind of throwing some dirt?
Personally, I'm throwing words of motivation and excitement towards my competition. I was texting with Michelle Yates the other day, just saying I can't wait to see what the day holds for her, and I'm really cheering for her. And, you know, I text with Pam Smith, and, you know, Paul's wife, Meredith, we're always texting back and forth. And I mean, everybody's out there trying to accomplish their own thing, and we're all capable of what we're capable of. And, you know, I'm cheering for everybody that I'm competing against and everybody that's towing the line. So I think my trash talk is more good talk than anything.
I would expect that with the females. What about the males, Paul? Are you guys throwing something around?
There might be, but it's not coming from me.
Okay.
So everybody, right, they might be doing that, but they're not doing it to me, and I'm not doing it back to them. So as Brian Powell, I think, wrote that I'm more of the under-the-radar, not flashy, and not very speedy guy, and so I'm going to work my way from the back of the pack and pick up the carnage. So I'm not in any position to do any trash talking. But I will echo that, right, this is that race weekend is the reward for all of the work that you've done and the delayed gratification that you've plugged into your life. And so that's a huge, huge part of this journey is getting to that reward and of race day.
Well, with all due respect to Mr. Brian Powell and his comment towards you being in the just kind of laying back and not as fast, I would suggest that you invite him on a little trail run sometime, Paul.
and
smoke him.
Yes, I will. It's been a while since he's been out here for a trail run, so we're probably due for one.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of hill repeats and some speed work along the way, some agility training on some downhills.
That's right. I'm ready for it.
So, you know, we've talked a little bit about the giddiness, the electricity that you go into a taper. You're getting excited about it. You're sending texts to your fellow runners and wishing them luck. How do you get the required amount of sleep? Do you find that you're waking up in the middle of the night or having dreams about this race and it's almost disturbing that taper or that rest?
You know, I'm a big sleeper either way, whether there's a race coming or not. So I'm still getting, you know, 9 to 10 hours of sleep a night. And for me, it's definitely, I'm excited for the race, but it's almost more anxiety producing for me. So I have to try to keep that in check and almost not hyper-focus on the race and just think of it as, you know, I'm going out for a long training run.
So you're not losing sleep. It's more of the waking hours.
Yeah, it's the waking hours that you know, I have to kind of try to keep my mind at bay and keep positive thoughts streaming instead of self-doubt. But yeah, it takes a lot to interrupt my sleep.
Both of you are going to be traveling to get to Western States. How do you manage travel? How many days in advance do you arrive on site? How do you manage that so it doesn't deplete you in any way? Paul, you want to start?
Sure. We'll fly out to Reno Wednesday morning. So first flight out Wednesday morning, and we should hit spa right about lunchtime and get unpacked and get settled in our place there at the resort and then just relax Thursday and Friday and keep up that frequency of activity just to make sure that you do get into a new routine. Of course, it's two time zones away, so I like to get on the local time zone just as quickly as possible and get a good night's sleep that first night, probably go to bed early, and wake up early, get in a little shakeout run, and then, maybe do something in the afternoon as well and find my way to the pool or the hot tub and stretch out, and then have a good dinner and go to bed.
How about you, Eliza? How do you handle travel?
Yeah, so my husband and I will actually fly out Wednesday morning as well, and we'll fly into Sacramento, and unlike Paul, I actually will not make the switch over to Pacific time. I'll stay on Eastern time, and that way getting up early on Saturday morning doesn't feel so early. So, you know, I'm the crazy one that's going to bed when it's like 6 p.m. out there and waking up bright and early, but I just don't find that for me it's enough time to get my body in that new rhythm time-wise. So I just stick with East Coast time.
That's interesting. I've never heard of that, and it sounds it makes sense, actually. I think that's keeping your body as regular as you can is a good plan, especially when you're going that distance. So do you guys get any sleep the night before the race? You can go to bed at any time you want, Eliza. Can you get some rest on Friday night?
Yeah, it usually takes me a little bit longer to fall asleep, but I would say I usually get a solid 8 hours the night before, before whatever time we wake up, 3 in the morning or whatever. I've never had a problem, knock on wood, getting my sleep there. So, you know, really nice accommodations, and I just watch a little trashy TV before I go to bed, and that seems to put me to sleep, and all is good.
How many alarms do you set?
usually my own, and then I have my husband set his as well. But, you know, we'll be staying with the Solomon crew, so there'll be a lot of people stirring in the morning and checking on each other to make sure we're up and ready.
Have either of you guys missed the start of a race for sleeping in?
No, not yet.
I almost missed the start of Trans Gran Canaria because we got very lost en route to the race because, you know, it starts at one end of the island and we were at the other. So that was a little stressful, you know, getting to the start line like 5 minutes before it was go time. So that was close enough for me.
How about you, Paul? As we're closing in on this topic of taper, we're on the last night. Do you get any sleep that night at all?
I do. I get some good sleep, and I try and focus on the night before, making sure that, in this case, Thursday night is a really solid night of sleep. Just in case, for some reason, if Friday I can't get to bed or do anything. And so that's why I think trying to stay or continue to wake up early, get in some kind of workout in the morning, and get a short nap but not too long on Thursday and Friday so that getting to bed on Friday night is not a problem. And knowing that, hey, if I only get 3 or 4 hours of sleep, hopefully I got a really good night of sleep the night before. And knowing that only 3 or 4 hours of sleep on a Friday night is not going to be the end of the world for the race because, right, you're going to be moving, you're going to be working hard, and sleep's going to be the last thing from my mind on Saturday.
Yeah, I think Thursday is the big night. That's the one to load up on, and anything can happen on Friday because Saturday's a different animal that you're wrestling, and sleep isn't going to be the biggest hurdle. You know, it's
right.
I think it's more of the hills, the heat, and the clock.
Yes, no doubt.
Hey, well, we really appreciate you joining us on this last of the taper and to get to talk about the taper.
For those of you who are following virtually, or maybe you're even out on the course either volunteering or spectating, Eliza, what number are you bibbing?
I am going to be number 33 this year.
Nice.
33. And Paul?
I am bib number 23.
Ooh, that'll be easy to remember.
So we'll watch for you both screaming through and wish the very, very best of days for you, that all the training, the tapering, the Ben and Jerry's that's waiting, the Girl Scout cookies that are positioned for tearing into, and even some of the granite top that needs to be tiled or the grout that you need to place will be waiting for you, and you'll have a big smile when you come back as you've enjoyed reflecting on the great day of Western States.
Well, thank you
both for
cheering for us and for what you do for the ultra running community. I greatly appreciate it.
All right, guys. Now go out on Saturday and run fast.